was an anti-aircraft missile, but there is no antidote. There is no physical defense against a nuclear bomb. The only defense is a psychological one. You hope that if you threaten the Russians or the Chinese or whoever, if you threaten them enough, they won't fight. But of course,
it's all compounded now. See, thus far you've been emphasizing, and that's at the two, this battle between the two superpowers, U.S. and Russia. But now we know that other smaller nations also have this. So, see, we come to all these added elements that compound the peril.
And the bomb itself internationalizes war. For instance, Mr. Schlesinger made a survey about how many people would be killed if the Russians attacked only our missile silos. He came up with the figure 800,000. The Congress...
That is, 800,000 Americans would die.
We'd
win the war, though.
No, it wouldn't. It would just be a little exchange.
No, I'm just...
Right.
Okay.
The Congress decided to get a group of experts, all of whom had worked for the Pentagon at one time or another, under Dr. Wiesner, who's the president of MIT. They recalculated it. And the Pentagon agrees that their recalculations are accurate. They came up with the figure that there would be between 3.5 million to 22 million dead, depending on which way the wind blows, not taking into account how many people would die because there are no hospital facilities for the burned. Plus, and this is the point I'm trying to make, in addition to those 3.5 to 22 million, there would be 800,000 Canadians die in that kind of an attack. And if we hit Russia, there would be millions of Turks and millions of people in other countries that would die. Now, if a war breaks out of that kind, and if innocent nationals like the Canadians or the Mexicans are killed as a result of it, what would they do? They would have to enter the war on their own, wouldn't they? There's no way of stopping...
On whom would they drop the bomb?
Well, not necessarily drop a bomb, but Mexico, for instance, might retake Texas and California. And Canada, nobody knows what
it might do. This is a play by UNESCO. This is a play by Genet. This is not real, and yet it's real. We're talking now about, again, we're talking about madness.
I invite anybody to make a study of this nuclear arms race and to come out of that study without a feeling of the worst anxiety he's ever had.
By the way, Sidney, Bertrand Russell, I remember seeing him, or he died in North Wales, and he was saying, okay, what about the survivors? Millions will die. What would the life be for the survivors? The atmosphere themselves, psychologically as well as far as topographically, geographically, in every way, and as far as the atmosphere is concerned. There would be savages. They'd be living in a savage way, each for himself.
And they would be dying.
They'd be living the food, not knowing what food to eat. Most would be poisoned anyway, so they would all die too. But their life would be less than life, obviously. They'd be subhuman, of course.
Somebody said,
primordial.
I forget who said it, but somebody said the living would envy the dead.
So, if we could just, toward the end, you speak of the internationalization of it in the hands of scientists. But more than that, doesn't it need a whole new, back to Einstein again. At the moment, one man can decide.
At this moment,
the president can decide, can't he?
That's a very strange thing, Studs, if I may dwell on that for a second. The government says that we need civil defense shelters. They call it crisis relocation. They're going to move us 30 to 50 miles out of the city. And I asked somebody at civil defense, how are you going to do that? It only takes 28 minutes for a missile to get here. They said, well, we will know in advance when there's a diplomatic breakdown. We'll have a couple of weeks' time. So I said to him, well, if you're going to have a couple of weeks' time to relocate me, why don't you give me a couple of weeks to discuss whether I want this war and give me an opportunity to vote on it? Well, now they won't give me the opportunity to vote on it, or the American people the opportunity to vote on it. They won't even give our Congress people the opportunity to vote on it. They insist that one man has to make the decision on it. They have created a permanent emergency, a permanent national security state, and a permanent war economy, and they have made an imperial presidency with this nuclear arms business in which we, the people, have nothing to say about our own life.
What's the budget proposed by the administration?
It's $112 billion this year.
$112 billion.
Right.
We're talking about welfare recipients cutting the budget of the working man. Oh, boy.
And food stamps.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, Sidney Lenz is my guest. All we're doing is really just, not even meeting the tip of this iceberg that you've dug into iceberg. That's the wrong kind of metaphor, but it is that too. That knocked off the Titanic, and there's a lot of, we're on a Titanic, I guess. Doomsday Strategy is the piece by Sidney Lenz that appeared in Progressive Magazine. By the it's available now as a booklet, is it not?
Yes, all you have to do is write the Progressive Madison, Wisconsin. You don't need a street address.
Progressive Madison, Wisconsin. Ask for the Doomsday Strategy. Mm-hmm. I forget, it's a nominal price.
About 75 cents.
But you could, you cite all the comments and all the developments that have taken place. And I've been trying to avoid that, as you can gather on the show, because after a while
yes, it's awesome.
Utterly,
it's terrifying.
Awesome is a euphemism for the utter
and you can't live under that shadow and thinking of the danger all the time. But I think it behooves American people to do so.
I'm thinking of all the jobs for peace that could be made with all that dough. 112 billion, did you say?
Mm-hmm.
112
well,
billion.
Well, we spent since the end of World War II 1.6 trillion. That's $1,600 billion on the arms race.
And these are the questions never really asked by commentators on TV shows interviewing the candidates.
It hasn't been discussed.
This is
the
self-censorship we're talking about. This is assume. That's
right.
It. Us and them.
Right.
And we can come to Einstein again of that new way of thinking, or else. But suppose we end with Bertrand Russell again. He was fairly thoughtful, we'd say. Bertrand Russell, we had his comment, and he supposed to be closed with his comment, Sidney. Anything you care to say to precede Lord Russell?
No, Russell and tens of thousands of people of that type were perceptive about what would happen, but the political leaders didn't take their advice. And those political leaders who did decide that the whole thing was ridiculous, like Clark Clifford mm-hmm. And even the McGeorge Bundy and so forth, they're out of the picture now.
Well, then the obvious question is, what do the people do about it? This is it. And it's the question of raising this to senators, to congressmen, and to
right.
the White House, of course, obviously.
And
to
raising
discuss
it
this openly instead of having it so censored.
And we have a tendency to forget, Studs, that the essential ingredient of democracy is self-education, learning what the political process is all about. We don't do it.
Sidney Lenz, thank you very much.
As human beings, we have to remember that if the issues between East and West are to be decided in any manner that can give any possible satisfaction to anybody, whether communist or anti-communist, whether Asian or European or American, whether white or black, then these issues must not be decided by war. We should wish this to be understood, both in the East and in the West. There lies before us, if we choose, continual progress in happiness, knowledge, and wisdom. Shall we instead choose death, because we cannot forget our quarrels? We appeal as human beings to human beings. Remember your humanity and forget the rest. If you can do so, the way lies open to a new paradise. If you cannot, there lies before you the risk of universal death.